I didn't really prepare anything in terms of talking about endorsements. I'm going to just sort of go off the cuff, so to speak. And, you know, if you guys want to chime in at any time with questions, by all means, jump in. But, and the first thing I guess I would ask, I'm going to ask this question and see if anybody wants to type an answer. I guess my question would be, who endorses who when it comes to endorsements? And there's an artist like Chris Parker, for example. Thanks, brother. Who endorses who? Does Yamaha or Zildjian or Vic Firth endorse Chris? Or does Chris endorse Yamaha, Zildjian, and Vic Firth and Remo? Like, I mean, it's a very simple question, but I'm often surprised how often people don't get it right. So I'd just be curious to see if anybody wants to take the time to answer that question. Who you see? Jeremy Driesen, the artist, endorses the product. Very good, Jeremy. You've been listening. Jeremy's my friend from Martha's Vineyard, and I've you know, I'm going to take credit for him knowing the answer because I basically drill that into his head. No, he knows that. He's a smart guy. That's correct. So the artist endorses the product, and it's like anything else. It's like, you know, Michael Jordan endorsing Nike or Tiger Woods endorsing Nike or anybody. So it's not accurate when someone says, I'm endorsed by, you know, Chris Parker is not endorsed by Zildjian and Yamaha. I mean, they love him. Everybody loves Chris Parker. Who doesn't love Chris Parker? But he endorses those products because he has a name and he has a reputation and he has a profile in the drum world. So it's his credibility that lends itself to, and a great photographer and a great artist also. But it's his profile that lends itself to these companies so he endorses these companies. So that's the first thing. And I guess probably all you guys already knew that, but as I say, oftentimes I see people using the terminology that I'm endorsed by XYZ company. And I just wanted to clarify that. That's the first thing. And then if you want to get into, like, you know, I'm kind of like a frustrated English teacher. You know, I'm constantly correcting the way people say things and, you know, grammatically and whatever else. But the person, I'll use Chris as another example, Chris Parker, is an endorser of, not an endorsee, but an endorser of Yamaha, Zildjian, Vic Firth, Remo, and all his companies. He is the one that is endorsing, therefore he is the endorser. The company, technically, is the endorsee. They're the ones being endorsed. So anyway, again, oftentimes I'll hear people say, I'm an endorsee of XYZ company. So, no, they are in fact an endorser. So a little disclaimer, first of all, I used to work in the drum industry. I'm already going to need some water because I'm talking up a storm here. By the way, thanks to everybody who caught the Steve Gadd interview last week. I didn't want to call it an interview. It was really more like a chat. There's a question by Travis. What are some things you're responsible for with Gadd or others like him in your time at Zildjian? We'll get to that, Travis. I don't really want to talk about me, believe it or not. My wife would have a hard time believing that I don't want to talk about me. I really want to just talk about, for now anyway, how some of these things work. Because I think I've been out of the industry, quote, I left Zildjian at the beginning of 2013, so 7 years and a couple of months ago. And I still have people contacting me through Facebook, through LinkedIn, through other places about endorsements, thinking I still work there. But people still contact me about getting hooked up with Zildjian or knowing that I'm not working there, but any advice on how to do it or just advice on contacting companies. So, and then I saw something, as I said, I saw something last week or the week before where I won't get into names or anything like that. I don't know the person and I don't want to be negative because he seems like he's a good guy and his intentions were good and his heart was in the right place. But this idea of imparting information to people on how to get an endorsement, like the how-tos, who to contact, the way to do it. I'm going to just say that coming from that world, now I've been out of that world for 7 years, and things have changed a lot since I've been gone. I know that. The whole industry has changed tremendously in 7 years. But to say that there's a sort of how-to that I could give someone, or that I could conduct a webinar and charge money to tell people how to get an endorsement is a disservice. It's disingenuous and it's just not accurate, because the industry right now is at a point where companies are really having a hard time, just like everybody else. All the musical instrument companies are no different from your local restaurant and your local hair salon and, whatever small businesses or big businesses you can think of, other than hand sanitizer companies. These companies are having a hard time. So right now, today, to think that you could walk away with information like, I've got the 5 easy steps to getting an endorsement, it just doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And I don't want to speak out of school, because like I said, I haven't worked there now for a few years. I have a lot of friends still working in that industry. And this is really, maybe even just a way for me to try to support what they have to deal with, and with the number of people that kind of have it the wrong way and how it even works. So I'm just hoping to maybe dispel some of that stuff. As you know, I use the products, especially Zildjian Symbols, way before the endorsement. Same with Vic First Six. See, that's it. That's exactly it. And thank you for saying that, Chris. And I do know that. And I was going to get to that and say the best, and this is probably obvious to a lot of people, but I'm going to say it because, again, it only takes one person not to know this for it to make sense. But the best endorser that a company can have, whether it's Zildjian or Vic Firth or Gretsch Drums or anybody, is someone who has gone out and bought the product and uses it and loves it. I have all these drum sets here that I've bought. I've actually bought a lot of these cymbals that I'm using. A couple of them I have from when I worked at Zildjian. I didn't get many cymbals when I worked there because I wasn't playing. So there wasn't really a point. People think I have this unbelievable collection of cymbals. I wish I had thought ahead, because I would. But I've actually bought a lot of cymbals used on eBay and in other places. And I actually bought a couple. I bought this China from Shane Kinney's place in Portsmouth, Drum Center of Portsmouth, last fall. When Nate Morrison had his drum shop up in Beverly, Mass., I bought some cymbals for him a few years ago. And I probably could have, as a former employee of Zildjian, I probably could have got a couple of cymbals from him, but it made sense to me to support the drum shop. Zildjian still got the business. Everybody wins, kind of thing. And I was in a position and am in a position where I can afford to buy a couple of cymbals every now and then. So it works out well for everybody. But back to that. Richie, you spoke to me about endorsements years ago and helped clarify the game. Well, I'm glad I did, and thanks for saying that. To me, there's a lot of things that come into play. And I'm going to just jump backwards again and say that when I started working in the industry in 1985, the business was so different then to begin with. I did a little bit of artist relations when I worked for Simmons, and that was in 1985. I then went to work at Drum Workshop in 1986, and it was the beginning of DW Drums, and I was artist relations there. And all the guys that we signed, basically, besides Danny Serafin and maybe Ricky Rocket, bought their drum sets. I mean, we weren't in a position to give drums away to people, so we were selling drums at an artist price, with the idea of getting visibility and getting the brand out there and getting people around town playing them. But there was a fine line that we had to walk, because I'd get a phone call from my friend Stan at Pro Drum Shop in Hollywood saying, "Hey, Bob, I'm doing well. Thank you. Hope you are too. Bob Sadlowski used to work in artist relations many years ago for Sonar Drums back in the early 90s. Anyway, that's just as an aside. So some of this, I think, will sound familiar to him. But there's a fine line that you walk in those situations where you're not selling factory direct, and you don't want to cut out your dealer, who's you hope is going to sell lots more drum sets or cymbals or whatever for you. So there's always that. Now, when I went to work for Zildjian in 1989, they had a very structured program, thanks to Lenny DiMuzio and other people there that were there at the time. And it was very proactive in artist relations. I was hired specifically. They recruited me to work there. And I was there specifically to look after the drummers, to look after the artists on the East Coast. And on the West Coast was my dear friend, the late, great Mike Morris, who was at the West Coast office. And Zildjian also has an office in London. And there was a guy there named Ian Croft, who worked in the London office at that time. So we all worked together in tandem, and we, you know, as I said, we would seek out the new bands coming up. We would take care of the Chris Parkers and the Steve Gadds and, you know, all the guys that were already on the roster. But the difference, one of the big differences, I should say, at that time was the actual music industry. When I say music industry, I don't mean drum companies and cymbal companies and stick companies. I mean like real music companies like Capitol Records and Sony Records and Geffen Records and the industry and MTV and all the things that were happening in 1989. And all that changed, as everybody knows. I don't know how many years ago now. It's probably been close to 20 years, really, that it shifted the way that it did. It's been at least 15 years since, by recollection, that, you know, it the industry that we, the music industry, the record industry that we knew, really sort of imploded. But when I started in the business, we worked closely with record companies. Record companies would sign a band, a three-album deal, company, Capitol Records, Sony Records, somebody, Atlantic Records, would sign someone, a band, to maybe a three-album deal over 5 years or however many years, maybe not even a, could be open-ended in terms of the number of years. And the A&R person at that label would contact me and say, we just signed this band, the Black Crowes. And the drummer, Steve Gorman, loves your stuff. And we're going to put him out on the road with Aerosmith for a tour to support their first record that comes out. It's going to drop on XYZ date. And so you had to do a little work on your own. You know, you had to sort of do some research on these bands. You had to, many times, all the information to make an informed decision wasn't all there. And you had to sort of go with your gut and maybe say, I like this band a lot. I like this drummer a lot. He plays great. I'll give you an example of that in a minute. In some cases you go, you know what? There's about five other bands like this right now. I don't see these guys getting a lot of traction. I'm going to pass on this band. And I'll give you an example of a band. This was in the early 90s, around 92 or 93. I got a cassette tape from a management company called Red Light Management. And it was about a band called Dave Matthews. And it was a live recording. And it was, they had just been signed. This is where the work comes in. You know, you need to, and it's not like the people that do these jobs today, artist relations people at all these companies, it's not like they have a ton of time to sit there and listen to tapes and CDs. And I think it's done different now. This is how analog I am. I think it's all done way more digitally and you know, through you know, they upload their information and it's probably a lot easier at least to access it. But nevertheless, there's time involved that you know, people have to take time in and amongst their other duties to listen to these records, these demo tapes that people send in, promo packages. And in that case, you know, as I say, with Dave Matthews Band, drummer by the name of Carter Beauford, and I listened to this tape, and I'll be honest, the music itself didn't sell me right away, but I was floored by the guy playing drums. And I remember thinking, And I, you know, I even told Carter this story like a year later when I met him, and he thought it was hilarious. And I said something to the effect of like, you know, I heard this fiddle and I heard this, you know, sort of music that was very different at the time, because it was at the same time, you know, Nirvana and Soundgarden and all these bands were all over the radio, and, you know, Pearl Jam. And then here's Dave Matthews playing this way more rootsy kind of music, you know. But Carter's drumming just stopped me in my tracks. I mean, I was floored to hear that. So I signed him up on a deal that basically allowed him to buy some cymbals at cost. And, you know, like it was probably a year later when their first record hit that, I mean, you know, they just exploded. So we changed his deal. he got a few free cymbals after that. But anyway, I'm kind of digressing. I want to just go back for a minute and just talk about what it takes, you know. And again, I want to be careful to say this, because I don't want to say that I'm speaking for any companies present day, because I don't work for any of these companies, and their criteria could be very different now. And I think it is. I think a lot of it has to do much, much more with social media. But I was going to say, you've got to find a way to get your message out there, and you've got to find a way to get the attention of people at these companies. You've got to find a way to cut through all that and basically influence people. At the end of the day, what it comes right down to, what any company is looking for, is someone who can influence consumers to buy their products. It's that simple. And it's, you know, it's almost like, you know, I won't say it's like a ruthless business. It's certainly not that. But in order for it to work properly, it has to be more slanted toward the company's benefit. In other words, and I don't want to say Zildjian specifically. I'm going to say any company in the industry that signs up an endorser is going to want to feel that if we spend 10 cents on this guy, we want to make sure we get a dollar back. That's just how it works. It wouldn't make sense to spend 10 cents to get 10 cents back, or even 15 or 20 cents. So you've got to get like a, look at it like almost like a tenfold payout for someone that at least again, when I worked in that side of the business, you'd want to feel like you were going to get a real benefit from bringing somebody on board in terms of their influence. And that can be in a lot of different places. I started to say at the beginning of this that at the time, you know, going back to, you know, when I started at Zildjian and even up until, I don't know how many years ago, but, you know, MTV was a huge factor besides the record companies and the sort of connection, because we would take our leads from record companies, basically. You had these connections with people. I see my friend Mike Ferris. Works for Pearl. He was Pearl's artist relations director for many, many years. So again, he's someone that can definitely speak to this. But you know, at a time when you could see where the trends were with bands through the record companies and who they were supporting, it was much easier to do that job. You could, you know, if you had someone contact you who was playing your product already, and you see that they're signed with Geffen Records, they're spending $100,000 on a video for MTV, and you know it's going to be in rotation X number of times per day. It's kind of a no-brainer, at least for me. Unless we were at a point where it was really, really tight, and you had to sort of put the brakes on for a minute, you'd take a chance with someone like that. Because hi, Joni, because you didn't have a lot to lose at that point. You'd know you'd get some good exposure from a band like that, especially if they were going to go out on a major tour, even supporting not on a headlining tour, but supporting an act. I used Steve Gorman of the Black Crowes as an example. I met Steve in the summer of 1990 when they were opening for Aerosmith. Their record had just come out. And I'd probably heard Jealous or whatever their first single was I'd heard on the radio, and I was sort of familiar, but it was really, really the beginning. And I liked Steve a lot. I loved the way that he played. I loved just how natural and organic his playing was. And I actually spent quite a lot of time with him before the show talking. And, hey, Chris Anzalone, Chris just texted me. I didn't get to see it, though. But anyway, I was just saying with Steve, I was taken by something like, I don't know, like a year or two. It was a crazy amount of time. He was in this band that was, you know, had a big record deal, had a couple of big songs on the radio, and he was this very natural, organic, you know, very loose, great-sounding drummer. So anyway, signed up Steve, you know, and you know, that the rest of that became history, so to speak. I mean, he's, you know, he's certainly a guy that over the years has built a, you know, a reputation and a following, and he's an influential drummer and all that. So it's those kinds of things that, that we could do back then. Now I don't know, you know, it's a very different thing because, as I said, you don't have that record company connection that you know, that we had 30 years ago, even 25 years ago, when you knew there was going to be some level of support from a record company pushing a band. And I'll segue that into MTV, which was a huge part of it. You know, when you look at how much exposure MTV provided musical instrument companies back in those days, you know, and they certainly got wind of it. There were times when they would do some of their unplugged specials or some of those things where you'd see logos on the bass drum taped up, or it was a weird time where it got like that, where they were getting a little bit wise to it and realizing that companies were getting, you know, extra exposure. You know, Zildjian and I think all the cymbal companies, it made us all make what we call dead cymbals you know, video cymbals or silent cymbals. And what that was is we'd take two cymbals and glue them together with a giant logo on the top and the bottom. So they were not, you know, you'd be lip syncing, you'd be miming to a song, and you'd just have a dead cymbal, but you'd have your logo in plain view. So, you know, it wasn't brain surgery or rocket science to come up with that idea, but, you know, those were the kinds of things that we could do to get exposure. And, you know, we'd outfit backline companies with these cymbals so that when they shot videos, we'd make sure that our logo was nice and present in those videos. And again, that was part of the endorsement. You know, that was part of what the artist was expected to do for us. You're welcome, Tom Cohen. My pleasure. You know, that was part of the deal. That was the sort of give back. Like, you know, we're going to sign you up. This is what we expect. So my point is, now it's very different. You could say that really none of those things, or certainly most of those things, don't exist anymore. What we have now is social media. You have YouTube, you have Facebook, you have a whole bunch of, you know, Instagram, a whole bunch of social media mediums. But, you know, it's a different world now. It's a different world in terms of how you can sort of cut through all that stuff. Greeking, blurring logos is now common. Okay, Michael Vosbean. Michael Vosbean, by the way, is a very, I won't say very old, because it sounds like I'm saying he's old. He's an old friend. He's a very good old friend who was the Bosphorus artist relations man, U.S. Distributor for a long time, and later Crescent Cymbals. And anyway, so he knows a lot about this stuff as well. He was one of my competitors back in the day, but, you know, are we really competitors, though? Not really. We're all in this thing together. But, sorry, I got a little thrown off there, but I think it's in many ways harder for people with all that there is now in social media, for someone who's trying to approach a company to cut through everything else to get a company's attention. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, you need to stop and think about what you really need an endorsement for. Like, why? And I would ask that question, and if anybody wants to answer it, I'd appreciate it. Like, what would you want to get out of an endorsement if you were to contact a cymbal company, drum company, you know, insert name, Zildjian, Drum Workshop, Gretsch, whoever? What would you hope? And now this is you know, based on you being maybe not a household name player, which, you know, other than Chris Parker and Denny Sywell, I don't see many others on here. You know, what do you want to get out of it? Mike Ferris, you definitely got one of the right answers. No surprise there. you'd want to get service, obviously. You'd want to be able to get support on the road. What if you weren't on the road? What if you're playing, tour support, absolutely. What if you're kind of playing local clubs? You're just sort of locally. Like what do you, we're the adversaries, absolutely. So, you know, I guess my question would be like, what do you feel? And I want to say this so that I don't offend anybody. But what do you feel you could offer a company that would entice them enough to say, I want to bring you on board and make you one of our artists? Hey, Denny, it's good to see you, brother. Denny Sywell, if you don't recognize that name, played with a young left-handed bass player by the name of Paul McCartney back, you know, a few years ago. And Denny's an old friend of mine. To be able to get parts on the road, Turkey or Finland. Yes, very important to get those parts on the road. But, you know, I used to, when people would contact me about this stuff, that would be my question is like, well, what do you feel you can offer us? You know, because I think, I hate to say it, but there are so many great drummers out there, but being a great drummer isn't necessarily all that it takes. I will say that at a time, that was a lot of it. Thanks, Chris. How's my stick rebounding on this rubber pad? At a time, you know, your ability on the instrument went a long way. I mean, it certainly did when I started at Zildjian. You know, Lenny DiMuzio, myself, we signed a lot of guys that and gals that we believed in. And I mentioned Carter Beauford earlier, and I don't know if I finished what I was going to say about that, but my feeling was that this Dave Matthews Band is probably never going to go anywhere, but this guy, this drummer is going to end up playing with somebody. You know, he could play with Chick Corea. He could play with Jeff Beck. He could play with Herbie Hancock. I don't know. But it's true. I mean, at that time I was sort of half right. I felt like, you know, this Dave Matthews thing, I don't know. It seems a little, questionable whether this band's ever going to do anything. Boy, was I wrong about that. But I was certain that Carter himself was a good enough drummer that he was going to do something. So I took a chance on him and we could do those things in those days. But as companies build up their rosters and they have more and more people, it's harder and harder to justify, you know, but as the rosters get built up with more and more artists, it's harder to sign more people on spec deals, you know, on sort of speculation or developmental deals where, you know, we just, you know, they're a good drummer, but they don't really have a gig that's high profile and you hope that they're going to do something really big. But something that I want to segue into and talk about a little bit is the importance of educators. And no one, you know, I guess I hadn't really led up to that point, but when I was asking, what do you feel you can offer a company? I think for anyone who's a teacher, whether you teach at the college level or privately, I think that's a great example of someone who does have something to offer a company. It's a different part of the business, you know, that I did every day. I worked with a lot of educators, but it wasn't my day-to-day interaction was with more of the drum set, touring people and, you know, those guys. But, a lot of the bigger companies have an educational program. And I've always been a firm believer that a drum teacher that's the person on the front line, man. That's the person right there that is, you know, your best advocate. And so I think any kind of educator, but whether it's whatever instrument you play, but education is so crucial that, if that's your field, if that's what you do, that's an angle that you could approach a company with. High profile in the local scene. Yeah. Thank you, Ron Donette, for agreeing. Yeah, Richie, definitely high profile in the local scene. But even that, I think nowadays is tougher, I think, for people to get attention with companies because of, well, I don't know. I think just because of how tight budgets have gotten for a lot of companies, for just the whole industry, the fact that, you know, not just the drum industry, but the musical instrument industry is not growing. I mean, it's certainly not robust like it was, and it's shrinking, and it has been shrinking for a while. Yeah, I mean, it's, and all this is to say that if you're a musician, drummer, guitar player, bass player, and you're seeking out, you know, setting up some sort of an endorsement or some sort of relationship with a company, if nothing else, right now is probably not the best time to try to do that, to feel that you could approach a company for a lot of reasons. And probably the most important one is the fact that companies are not having a great time right now. So you would do yourself more good, or I should say you do yourself more harm by doing that now. You do yourself more good by waiting until things are somewhat back to normal before you, I don't want to say make a nuisance of yourself, but you know, there's that potential. I dealt with people back in my day that that I know were good musicians, were good drummers, and they might have been, you know, you know, pretty popular in their local scene, as Richie Morales pointed out, like high profile in their local scene, but still not at a national level, not at a point where, you know, they probably influenced a lot of people in their town and in their area, which is great. But, you know, at a point you have to be willing to accept if the answer is no, then you have to be willing to accept that, at least for the time being. Or if, you know, what I tried to say, honestly, a lot of times is not right now. I would never say never. You know, I would never say we're never going to sign you up, because you don't ever want to say that. You don't ever want to put yourself in a situation where you completely shut the door on somebody and piss that guy off and then have the guy go play somebody else's product when he becomes famous. You want to leave that door open and say, look, what you're doing right now is great. You're obviously a great drummer, but it's just not enough for us right now to make it happen. But you're close, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And you know, and it's really simple for me to sit here and say that. But it's true. You know, what I used to say to people all the time, whether it was a NAMM show or somewhere, and Brendan Buckley, another great drummer, a lot of great drummers watching. I'm a little bit nervous here. But, you know, what I'd often say to people at a NAMM show or at a PASIC or someplace would be, boy, Siri just cut me off here. I think my house is haunted. What I'd often say is, you know, you're close. You just need to get to that next level in terms of like your profile and who you're playing with. And then we can make something happen. Because as I say, you never want to, I'm trying to give you an example of someone that, if Zach Alford happens to jump on here, he could verify this, but Zach was the drummer that I met in New York. He was in New York, still in New York, when I started at Zildjian, and he was playing in a bunch of different bands, but one band in particular was Body Bag, because I know this, because he just, and there's Zach's teacher, Justin DiCiocio, who just jumped on here. Justin, good to see you, sir. Zach is a great drummer, sent me a tape, sounded great, but he wasn't really doing enough to really warrant sort of jumping on board. We stayed in touch. I think I traded out a cymbal for him that he had cracked or something. I went to New York a few times and bumped into him at Manny's or Sam Ash or someplace, probably Manny's. Kept the relationship going, and a year later, he's playing with the B-52s. Bang. Charlie Drayton had recommended him for the gig. Boom. That was all it took. I mean, it was like he was already certainly there in terms of his playing, just needed that extra little jump profile-wise. And certainly with the B-52s at that time, that was it. And then, you know, 2 years later, 1992, he's playing with Bruce Springsteen. And he never looked back. Sean Pelton, who's the drummer on Saturday Night Live. Again, someone that I met 30-something years ago, was playing in New York. He was a student of Kenny Aronoff's. I saw him playing a gig in Boston. We met, became friends, stayed in touch. Yeah, Zach played with David Bowie, of course. And then Sean got a gig with somebody else, and then he got the SNL gig. And, you know, like, so my point is that don't feel like, if a company, first of all, if a company says not right now, don't feel like you then have to go. If that's the company you love and you believe in, if it's Pearl Drums or Gretsch Drums or DW Zildjian or Sabian or Peisty or Meinl, if that's the company you truly love, then just try to build that relationship with that, with the people there, and accept that they know what they're doing. You know, the people that do these jobs do know what they're doing. And if they're not able to do something right now, there's a reason for it, whether it's financial or whether they just feel the criteria hasn't been met yet. But just accept it and keep working harder. Because if you, this is what I was getting at, once you get to the point where you're that good, they're not going to be able to ignore you. They're going to contact you. They're going to want you. That's how it works. I can tell you that. They're not going to want to see you go to their competitor. I hope this all makes sense. The point of all this is that there is not, you know, a 5 or a 7 or a 10, you know, point plan, on how to get an endorsement deal with somebody. It just doesn't work that way. It's not a question of you need to call the right person. Don't give your information in the, forget all that. If you contact a company and you send your information, and whether you do it via, you know, you upload it to a website. I think in the old, you know, I don't think they're doing it like when I was doing it in the old days of sending a package in with a CD and a, you know, and a bio and all that. But if you do, I mean, don't think that that's not getting to the right person, because it is. I'm certain that it is getting to the right person. You just have to understand that person has probably 10 other things that they're doing, and of which 7 are probably dealing with, maybe not right this at this moment, but people that are on the road that need stuff tomorrow, that someone's visiting them that day. They're maybe in a meeting discussing new ideas, new product, new advertising, whatever. So, you know, just my point is, don't get frustrated and think that's it. I'm giving up on this company, even though it's the company that I love. I'm going to go over here because they're more receptive to me. I mean, you can do that, but then Jamie Tate, only 10. Yeah, I used to max out at around 15 per day, Jamie. And then I'd go, that's it. No more calls. But you know, it's I forget what I was going to say, but it probably wasn't that interesting. But yeah, just no. I know my point is that you want to play the products that you love. I mean, that's it. It all comes back to what an endorsement is. At the very beginning of this, when I said, you know, who endorses who, the company or the artist? The answer is the artist. The artist endorses the cymbal company, the drum company, the stick company. It doesn't make sense if you don't believe in a product to endorse it, just because they might give you one for free, which is probably unlikely unless you're somebody of you know, pretty notable profile, or even at a discount, which in effect is selling it factory direct. You know, and I won't go on too much about that, but I do see so much of that with companies that fool people into thinking that they're part of an endorsement program, an artist program, and we're going to make you, you know, we're going to put you on our website, and all you have to do is buy our product at whatever the discount is off retail, and they have this made up retail price. and you're basically paying what you would have paid for it in a music store, in a drum shop. And for what? Ron Danette, question. Describe your feelings when an artist you signed and support leaves for monetary incentive. Well, I didn't want to get into that stuff, Ron. That's maybe a conversation you and I can have over a beer. But no, that's a tough one, Ron. When someone leaves a company for those kinds of reasons, that's a whole other can of worms that I won't get into right now. But if anything, I would just that would be my takeaway from all this is that, you know, you want to be as pure as you possibly can. And I would tell people that all the time, you know, when someone would say to me, I love your stuff, but XYZ company is offering me this deal. And, you know, if you guys aren't going to do it, then I'm going to go with them. And thinking that that was going to get me to change my mind, you know, when really that's probably the worst thing you can say to anybody. That does that job that I used to do that some of my friends, you know, still do today to sort of try to leverage, you know, unless you're, you know, I don't know who I could give you as an example. I mean, you'd have to be somebody, I can't imagine, you know, Questlove saying that, but if you're on TV in front of millions of people every night, you'd already have the deal you want anyway. So that's a moot point. But I guess if you're a semi-unknown drummer to the rest of the world and you approach a company and they politely decline and pass to then say, well, you know, I'm going to go to your competitor because they've offered me this. You know, it's really the worst thing you can say. And you're not going to do yourself any good in that regard because they're going to remember that. So I hope that all makes a little bit of sense. Are there any questions anybody wants to, I think, about Stanton and why he signed up with Z? Yeah, you know, I'll talk about Stanton for a second. I approached Stanton Moore in 1998, I remember. And Michael Vosbeen, I don't think you were with Bosphorus quite yet, or maybe you were, but I'd had a couple of conversations. Chris Parker, pure. Even when I was turned away by a company whose product I wanted to endorse, I did not stop using it. Exactly. Yep. And that's, you know, and that can leave probably a little bit of a taste in your mouth, Chris, I'm guessing. But at the end of the day, it's what you use. I remember when I called Nike for an endorsement and they said no. I still bought their shorts. No, I'm kidding. I never called Nike. I used to use that as my example of when I first met Stanton in 98, I approached him and he basically said, I love what you guys do, but I think I'm going to go with a more handmade, hand-hammered symbol like a Bosphorus. So he declined the Zildjian endorsement, went with Bosphorus, was there a long time, as we know, and became Crescent in the U.S. and then basically created the Crescent brand, and he was part of the ownership of that and all that. And then, you know, he recently went to Zildjian, and that's long after I'd left, so I don't know what the reasoning was with that, but he did, you know, and he seems to be happy. I've not spoken with him, but, but, you know, I mean, people, he might've just felt that he was going to get, you know, better long-term support through a big company like Zildjian. And people do those things for all sorts of reasons, you know? So that's, you know, that's Stanton's a guy that I think, he's a smart guy. I think he had an idea of what he wanted to do. And yeah, he did it for the purest of reasons. And I was glad to see that. You know, I would have loved to have worked with him during the time I was there. And we were always friendly. And all those years that he was with Bosphorus and Crescent, a couple of times when I was in New Orleans, we got together. And we had a great hang one time at Montreal Drum Fest. It was the last year, 2012, that I was working for Zildjian, and I got one of the nice rooms in the floor of the top floor of the hotel that allowed us access to this, you know, kind of like a lounge, like a private lounge, but it was anybody on the top floor could go in there, but no one ever went in there. And Keith Carlock and I would go there after the show each day, with a couple of bottles of wine. And I bumped into Stanton earlier that day, who was on the festival. And I said, come on up to the, whatever it is, the 16th floor. And he showed up later one night on the Saturday night. And he's like, wow, this is awesome. You guys got this whole room. And a bunch of other people showed up. And it's a great time. He's a great guy to hang out with. Anyway, the endorsee will see through the potential endorser if he or she is not sincere or passionate about the product. That is correct. That is correct. That is correct. And you use the correct form of endorsee and endorser, Tom. I'm very proud of you. Endorsee being the company and the endorser being the artist who endorses said company. So I don't know if I missed any questions here. What about our favorite drummer changing brands so much? Well, Raj, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't want to get into all that stuff. I don't, people do things for different reasons. And I'm a believer that in almost all those cases, there's actually a reason for it. You know, a legitimate reason. I'll be honest, when I was on the other side of that, when someone would leave, I'd get very, in many cases, I'd get upset. But you know, as I got older and as got into the job more, I realized that there are different factors out there for people changing companies. It's not always financially driven. There really are reasons for people to do it sometimes. And you know what? And the other thing I've come around with, or come around on, I should say, is, and this is going to sound really crazy coming from me, but if you know me pretty well, you might not be surprised by me saying this, but, and this is obviously with, you know, with the hindsight now, clearly 2020, in the rearview mirror, you know, musicians, drummers, guitar players, most musicians don't get royalties for records. They're not songwriters. They don't have a revenue stream. They make their living from touring, you know, gigs. There's no more session scene. The days of Steve Gadd, you know, being double and triple booked every day, you know, making, you know, double, triple scale, those days are gone, you know. Even a guy like Vinnie Colaiuta or John Robinson, who work as much as you can probably work in the studio these days, aren't nearly as busy in the studios as they used to be. And it's not because they're not great drummers, obviously. It's just the work is not there. So what I'm getting at is, if a drummer is presented with an opportunity where they can make some extra money, whether it be designing some cymbals where they get a royalty, or drumsticks, which many drummers have, you know, designed and get a royalty on, or some sort of a product, or if in the days of clinics when they were something, which they really aren't anymore, but when a company would say, we'll put you out for X number of clinics or X number of dollars. You know, I mean, when you have to put food on the table for your family, I can understand that, you know. And I was certainly on the other end of that, on the other side of that, when in a couple of cases where that happened. You know, so I guess my point to that, Raj, is I don't begrudge anybody making a living, and it's harder and harder for people to make a living nowadays. So if you can find some sort of a niche to get out there and do that, then you got to do it. You know, you just have to do it. Okay, Anthony, question. How would you say a potential artist should respond if they're not interested in the particular product at that? Anthony, your question did not download all the way. How would you say a potential artist should respond if they're not interested in the particular product at that? I'm going to guess you say at that company, if they're not interested in that product. Well, I think that's where the artist relations managers come in handy. If I'm understanding your question correctly, and I apologize if I'm not reading the entire question. It stopped and I can't get it to, it says see more and I can't get it to download. But if your question is, how do you deal with, respond if they're presenting a product to you that you don't like at a company that you endorse, you need to just have a conversation with your artist relations manager, the person that looks after you. And I would assume if it's a, you know, a major company, there's going to be one or two people that are your contacts, your internal contacts for artist relations. And that's not a pleasant conversation for anybody to have, you, the artist, or me, the guy on the other end of the phone. that works for the company when you say you're not happy with the product. But, you know, I'm pointing to me. I'm not there anymore. So take me out of the picture. But the person on the other end of the phone, Dave Maddox is watching, and I have to talk about Dave for a minute. You know, that's something that they need to hear. You need to tell that person. And I was that person a couple of times, more than a couple of times, where someone had to be honest with me and say, I'm not digging that stuff that I just got that you sent me, or I went into this place and I tried this stuff and it wasn't happening. So I hope that answers your question, Anthony. You know, those are those conversations where you know, it's the give and take, and that's what it takes. Did you ever ask an artist to help promote a lower line product series? Yes. Yes. Honesty always works best, Dave Stark. Yes. Thank you very much, Dave. That's exactly what I was getting at. Just honesty. And the person you're talking to will appreciate that. Yes, Bob. We oftentimes would ask, you know, guys like Trey Cool or Travis Barker, Adrian Young to endorse the cheap entry-level symbols like ZBTs. And typically, they would do it for a little while, and then they wouldn't want to do it anymore. And you can understand why. So there was a question. I think I missed it. I apologize. It scrolled past, but artist's role in development of products. Yeah, I was going to just comment on my friend Dave Maddox watching, my very good friend Dave Maddox. Dave, sit tight for 1 second, because I'm going to say that Jamie, yeah, see, that's an interesting comment that you made about artists' role in development of products. That's a tricky one, because a lot of companies have someone internally, for example, at Zildjian, Paul Francis, whose job it is, his job is to develop products. So it's a tough job for Paul to field all the many people that have ideas, and they all have the best intentions. And I don't envy Paul's situation, and that he's, I'm sure, continues, because when I was there, that was the case, continues to get bombarded with ideas for products, some good and some not. So you got to sift through that. But at the same time, Paul knows a lot about symbols himself and knows how to develop products himself. Do you know what I mean? So you never want to shut that door on the artists, but at the same time, that's not really what, at least when I was there, what we were expecting from our artists to do. We were expecting our artists to promote our products, to play them, of course, exclusively, promote them as best they could. Hagi at Yamaha, exactly. You know, you had Hagi, who was, you know, the greatest drum innovator ever, you know, inventor. You have Paul Francis. You have all these people at these companies. You have John Good at Drum Workshop. Come on, you have Paul Cooper at Gretsch. So you've got these, you know, legends in the industry, these gurus at what they do. So it's a hard thing for the people in these companies to sort of work with people wanting to continue to develop products. Do you know what I'm saying? And sometimes, through no fault of their own, an artist can have maybe a little bit of a little bit of tunnel vision in terms of what that product is. They see it as something that they themselves would love to have. This is the greatest ride cymbal I've ever played. It does this, 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 this. And I showed it to two of my best friends and they loved it too. But that doesn't always translate to it being a big successful product. And that's why there's guys like Paul that, you know, can evaluate things and can say, actually, you know, we make something already like this. We make a blah, 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 that's very similar. And what I could do is I could modify this and make one for you, you know, and then you'd have one. But to make it a branded, you know, to make it a SKU, there's a whole lot more that goes into that than when I was there too. That whole process has changed. You know, that was so my point is that, while I'm sure they don't, the companies don't refuse ideas from artists, they're not necessarily going to all their artists and saying, give us your ideas. because they already have more products than they really know what to do with, if you know what I'm saying. If you go into any drum shop, go into Steve Maxwell's, maybe he's not a good example because he probably does have one of everything, but go into your average drum shop and you're going to see just a percentage of what each company makes. You're not going to see everything they make. They just don't have enough space. So to continue to make more and more products that are designed by somebody with an idea that might not be a real commercially viable product, it just doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, it's signature models. Well, again, Bob, I would say if it's a good signature model, sure. If it's something that I think the idea of having your name on something, I think that's changed. I think it still works for drumsticks, but lots of spits. But I think the idea of putting people's names on cymbals, I think that's kind of gone by the wayside now, right? We saw that for a while, but I think that's kind of stopped. I think a lot of consumers probably didn't feel good about playing something with someone's name on it. Maybe some did. Maybe if it was your favorite drummer and it had his or her name on it, you'd like that. But I think a lot of people were sort of wishy-washy on that. So thank you, David. Thank you. That, you know, again, to quote the great Michael Scott from The Office, if we have any fans of The Office out there, people watch that show, love that show. The great Michael Scott once said, "I want all the credit and none of the blame." So that's my disclaimer. If I'm wrong about anything, don't blame me. If I'm right about any of this, I'll take the credit. No, but I do want to use that disclaimer. It's been a while since I've done this professionally, but I'm basing this on, my experience and the things that we dealt with. And that's all. I really more than anything wanted to clarify that there is not some, handy dandy book on how to do that. So see if I've missed. Okay. So Dave Maddox, I hope you're still watching. Dave Maddox, very, very, very good friend of mine. A Brit who now lives here in the Boston area, lives in Marblehead, Mass. Beautiful, beautiful Marblehead, also known as the Marblehead Masher. It's just all this talk about endorsements and artists reminds me of this very, very funny thing that Dave said to me probably 30 years ago, close to it. We were having lunch. Dave was still living in London at the time, and he was visiting Zildjian. And we went and had lunch, and I can picture us. We were having lunch at this place called Strawberry Fair. Might have been Chili's. I don't know. It was a place, I can picture the location of where it is. And I didn't know Dave well. We'd met a few times, but I didn't know him real well at that time. Now I know him really well. But at that time, we're sitting there chatting, and we were talking about, and I think he said something to me like, how do you deal with all the stuff that you have to deal with and the advertising in those days, we did a lot of advertising in magazines, and Modern Drummer and, print advertising was the main media for Zildjian and all the companies. Not so much anymore. But, we were sort of lamenting the whole thing and, on how you sort of balance all that stuff of, who's going to be in print advertising and people's visibility and I'm probably not telling it right, but the bottom line is this. Dave Maddox said, Dave gets all the credit for this, none of the blame. He said, "Well, it's not like Sting was thumbing through Modern Drummer one day and saw an advert of Vinnie Colaiuta and said, 'That's the guy I want in my band.'" And it just summed it up perfectly. It summed it up perfectly. And the point to all that is that being in an ad, as great as it is to be in an ad, I mean, absolutely, it's great to see your face in an ad, but it's not going to get you the gig with Sting. It's not going to get you a gig with anybody. What it's meant to do is sell a product based on the fact that you're Dave Maddox or you're Vinnie Colaiuta or you're Chris Parker or you're Vince Wilburn, or any one of these guys that are watching right now. It's that's what the whole idea. And again, I'm probably, where do I send my $19? Ron, I'm going to give you my PayPal account. And can you send it in? Is the Canadian dollar stronger than the US dollar? I'll take it in Canadian, please. Anyway, my point is that that Dave Maddox very clearly made that day is that the idea of having someone in an ad is to not promote that person. It's to promote the product that they're in the ad for, whether it's, again, a cymbal company, a drum company, or whatever company. You want to put Dennis Chambers, you want to put Aaron Spears, you want to put Steve Gadd, whoever, in an ad to sell that product, not to promote that person. Tell the Steve Gadd joke. You know, I do have another Steve Gadd joke that I can tell before we're done, Chachi. This is one that I didn't tell the other day. Article that Craigie said, if artists leave Zildjian, they can't come back. That's true. That was a rule for a long time. And I think that's kind of been loosened over the years. It's certainly loosened in the case of Elvin, as you said. There were a couple of people, actually, that during my time that had left and we allowed to come back. Elvin was one. Jerry Brown, great drummer, who I think was watching one of these, played with Lionel Richie, plays with Diana Ross, a fabulous, fabulous drummer. But basically it was what we called Armin's golden rule, which was if you leave the company, you can't come back. And it was a simple concept that it was not meant to be a revolving door. You can't be with us 1 minute and go play the competitor because they've offered you, you know, a couple of free cymbals. And then the next year when they don't give you a free cymbal, you want to come back to us because you like us better anyway. You liked, you know, and people would say, but I like you better than the guy that works for so-and-so. Well, I'm sorry. And I like you too, but you can't come back. And that would always be the conversation that I would have with someone if they were leaving is like, well, you just understand if you leave, you cannot come back. I'm just letting you know that. And you probably will want to. And that happened more often than not when I would have that conversation that in a year or two, someone would want to come back. And it was very difficult because I would still like these people as humans and I see them, you know, from time to time, but it's just the way it worked. The other person that came back more recently that since I've been gone is Tony Royster Jr., which I was happy to see. And Tony actually reached out to me last year, just before he went back to Zildjian, which I thought was really cool that he did that, you know. And, you know, the other thing, what we're talking about right now, people leaving companies, I think that says a lot about kind of where the industry is and where consumers are right now. And this is maybe even for another conversation, another one of these, maybe a part two in the future. I'll do one of these to talk about this. But I think the effectiveness of endorsements has been watered down over the years. I don't think they have the same impact on consumers that they had years ago. You know, I think that there was a time when you could really bank on the influence that certain drummers had on, you know, affecting sales. You want to, artist relations is a part of the marketing department in basically any company. It's an extension of marketing. It's not advertised. It's a form of advertising, but it's not print advertising. It's not social media, but it's a way to advertise your product. You know, whether it's again, Questlove on TV or, I mentioned, you know, Dave Matthews on tour or something, but that's what it's meant to be. It's to sell your product. It's that simple. It's part of marketing. Follower accounts versus artistry. Exactly. So I think, you know, certainly when I was still at Zildjian, I left there at the end of 2012 for all intents and purposes. And I had definitely seen it diminish in terms of how effective, that was on consumers, you know, and I think consumers, I don't want to say that they're smarter than they were before. It's not that. I just think they're more jaded about stuff. I think, you only have to talk to a younger drummer from, you know, maybe not my generation who didn't grow up with Buddy Rich or grow up with Steve Gadd or Vinnie Colaiuta or Dave Weckl or Tony Williams or Elvin Jones, you know, all those guys that an old guy like me remembers and was influenced by, Jeff Beccaro. But, you know, I think you see people just kind of going, I'm going to play whatever I like, and that's great. I'm going to maybe mix what I play, or I'm going to buy these, but I'm going to buy them just because I like them. It's not because this guy plays them. I endorse your endorsement. So, you know, I think all those things have changed the landscape of how people that do artist relations have to do their job now, too. It's a very different way to approach things. Thank you. But only all those young musicians who call me seeking talent validation through an endorsement would listen to you. Thank you, Paul Quinn. Well, you have great advice and information. So they should listen to you. Charlie Drayton. Charlie, I was talking about you maybe 10 or 15 minutes ago. Your ears must have been burning. So I'm going to talk about Ringo for 1 second. And Ringo is the greatest. Now, this is speaking for Zildjian, that is. Now, with Ludwig, he is an endorser. He is a signed endorser. Ringo never got signed up as an official Zildjian endorser or artist. But he single-handedly in 1964, February 9th, after that Ed Sullivan show, I mean, that changed the world for everybody, every instrument company, but not the least of which was Ludwig and Zildjian. They were the most, they got the most benefit from Ringo. And I, you know, I was going to just mention Ringo as being the, you know, the greatest non-endorser of a product there ever was. Ringo, certainly, you know, playing Ludwig drums with that Ludwig logo on there, it was huge for those guys. And you know, Armin Zildjian, rest his soul, used to tell a story. He'd say, you know, at the end of 1964, we were 90,000 cymbals backordered, all because of Ringo. I mean, because he, you know, they couldn't make anything fast enough. He's the guy that carried that, all those companies, way past the 60s into the 70s. He created a boom in the drum industry and the Beatles, you know, in general, in the music industry that carried on into the 70s. I mean, so many kids started playing instruments because of the Beatles, and that perpetuated. I mean, that kept it going. You know, I started in the early 70s, but it was definitely the influence of the Beatles and all those bands almost 10 years later that carried me through. So it's unbelievable, the effect that Ringo and Charlie Watts, as Ron Dunnett said. What are your thoughts on personal websites in 2020? Are they no longer effective? I'm probably not the right person to ask that question, Aaron, but I would say I don't see the need. I don't see the reason to have one. If you can, I think, doesn't everybody now have a Facebook page, like not a personal page, but a public page where you can put all that stuff? And people are on Facebook so much, it's just a click away. You know, you don't have to then click onto Joe Blow's website. I don't know. It almost seems like it's not necessary anymore. With a surprise guest, it won't be Steve Gadd again. I'm just letting you know. I had enough of that guy that day. An hour and a half of him was more than I could take. Probably never, ever have him on again. Marco Cerda, I met in... Marco, was it... I think it was Chile where you... And I know your English probably is not great, and my Spanish is much worse. But Marco was someone that I saw play when I was in South America with Mike Mangini some years ago, and completely blew me away. He's a great example of someone that I went to our distributor in Chile, who was with me there, and I said, you have to sign this guy up. Give him some cymbals. Amazing, amazing drummer. I wish there was a way to get him to America so people could, or somewhere, you know, to expose him more, but he's a phenomenal drummer. Marco Cerda. Steve Smith. Milan, what would you like to know about Steve Smith? No, it's, you mean this Saturday. It's not going to be Steve Smith. No, way better than Steve Smith. If you see Steve, tell him I said that. Tell him that I'm going to have someone on my show Saturday that's way better than him. In fact, I would venture to say that the person I'm going to have Saturday is better than anybody. All right. Richard Bailey, when I mentioned great drummers watching, I meant to acknowledge you, and I'm going to wave to you right now. The great Richard Bailey. Wow. And Charlie Drayton. Unbelievable. Well, this was great.